Hello, hello, welcome. Dave, look what we have.
A quorum.
It's a quorum. It is a sea of my beautiful colleagues and friends in some cases, new faces. If you haven't signed in, please do so. We have a quorum so we can begin. I've got tickets to see Kim Deal tonight. I've taken my 14-year-old daughter. She's finally acquired some good musical taste, so I cannot miss that. Welcome. It's nice to see everyone. Make sure everyone's settled in okay. Okay, good. Good to see you. Welcome to our Senate meeting. We're going to start, as always, with the approval of the agenda. This is the opportunity to add things, take things away. We get to discuss what we want to discuss. Does anyone have any amendments to the agenda? I have one, but I'll let you have the opportunity first. Don't see anybody clamoring for the microphone. I would like to move that on the agenda, under special motions, which is item 4, we include... We include a second resolution regarding the library's website. Here, we're not voting on it now, but just I'm asking us to amend the agenda to consider this later. I'll ask for unanimous consent. Are there any objections to considering this motion later? Seeing none, we'll put this under special motions. Any other changes? Seeing none, I'll move that we approve the agenda as amended. Ask for unanimous consent. Any objections? All right, we got an agenda. Next is the approval of the Academic Senate meeting minutes from last month, a month ago. Are there any objections to the minutes? Any corrections, changes? If not, I'll ask for unanimous consent in approving those. Seeing none, we'll accept those. And we'll move on to item 3, announcements, administrative reports, and memorials. We have a guest speaker, but first I'll invite the body. If there are any announcements or memorials or administrative reports, please come forward. Thank you.
I have a memorial.
Sorry, could you just, for the record, introduce yourself?
Stephen Grover, Chair of Philosophy and Law Philosophy. Nick Jordan. James N. Jordan, one of the lawyers at Nick, died peacefully at home on West 69th Street on March the 7th. He was 86. Raised in Texas, his 1961 BA and his 1966 PhD, both from the University of Texas in Austin. He wrote his doctoral dissertation on the Scots philosopher David Hume. He taught briefly at Southwestern Missouri State University and for 4 years at the University of South Dakota before being hired here at Queens in 1970. He was tenured in 1975, promoted to associate professor in 1978, and to professor 10 years later. Nick retired after 49 years at Queens in 2019. Nick's publication record was modest, a handful of articles on various philosophers, Protagoras, Socrates, particularly Kant, and on the debate between free will and determinism. And the first volume of a projected two-volume history of Western philosophy. The second volume was never finished. There might have been a good deal more had Nick not been taken up with administration. On receiving tenure in 1975, he was immediately drafted as chair and tasked with managing a department deeply divided on politics and pedagogy in a city teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. Nick, unfailingly calm, polite, moderate, and reasonable, was the only person acceptable to all sides. By the time he took over as Dean of Social Sciences in 1982, the philosophy department was a happier, or at least much less unhappy place. Nick served for 5 years as dean. After that, he returned to philosophy for another 6 years as chair. He was meticulous, efficient, and effective in both these roles. I've never heard anything but praise for his competence and thoroughness, or his courtesy and kindness. After stepping down as chair, Nick became director of the MA in Liberal Studies, the role he remained in until his retirement. Nick was living proof that you can remain a Southern gentleman while becoming a diehard New Yorker. He was at the core of a cohort of philosophers hired by Queen's in the 1960s and 70s who gave faithful service to the college for 40 or 45 or 50 years. All are retired and now, sadly, another one of them is dead.
Thank you, Stephen. I'll ask the body to rise for a moment of silence. Thank you. Before we hear from our guests, are there other announcements? Come on, Megan. You always have an announcement.
I'm not the senator anymore.
Is there a show going on?
Yes.
You can talk.
I am Megan Healy.
Sorry to put you on.
Put that on the record, Dave. Our musical Ride the Cyclone opens on March 27th. The story of a group of teenagers killed in a tragic roller coaster accident, trapped in purgatory, and competing with one another for another chance at life opens at the Coliseum Theater. You can ride and die on March 27th, so please join us for the show. Tickets are available at the Zuckerberg Center box office.
Thank you, Megan. I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Old school folks know that Megan keeps us abreast of the cultural leanings of the college. I have a few announcements I want to make. First, these are just anticipatory for our next Senate meeting. I want to share them with you so that you can go back and check with your departments or think about them. This will, of course, all be in writing in the agenda that you'll see for next time. First is we're going to be considering next month, I hope, a motion by the Graduate School of Library and Information Sciences to change their name to the School of Information Studies. You will see quite a significant number of course changes in the UCC minutes for today. And so the last step, or not the last step, but one of the steps would be to also look at that name change. So I expect that to happen next month. Another thing that some of you will have heard the provost talk about and that we've discussed in different fora, is that the plural of forums, is the residency requirement that the college has. So I anticipate a motion to be made next month from the UCC changing the residency requirement from 45 credits to 30. Again, all this will be in writing. Happy to share more if you have questions about that, please. But I'd encourage you to go to your caucuses, constituencies, departments, et cetera, and check with them on that. This wouldn't be mandatory. This would be, the minimum would be 30. If a department wants to do more, they would be welcome to do so. The last thing is that I can't read my handwriting. This is going to segue directly to our guest speaker. I anticipate next month for this body to consider a motion to change our teaching evaluations, student evaluations of teaching. And we are now going to hear a presentation about that. So welcome Peter Lieberman to the microphone.
Let's see if is there a USB-C? This should work.
You've done this before, it looks like.
Not in this room. Thanks, Kevin, and to the Executive Committee for making this time available for me to give you kind of a warning or a heads up about this motion. That's pretty complicated and long. It runs to 20 pages. Apologies, I may run over a little bit in drafting it. But it's a lot of important issues, and so I'm just going to give you kind of an overview of what's coming and the sort of motivation for this. I'm speaking as a guest, but also as a member of the Senate, and as chair of the Committee on Excellence and Evaluation of Teaching, which also includes two students who I don't see here, Omar Ibrahim and Mohammed El-Jami, and faculty members Alex Reichel, Eric Silberman, Mark Mazza, who I don't think is here. This committee has not been very active since the pandemic, but really there are a lot of issues of addressing teaching with AI and ChatGPT and online learning and things, so I think this committee should be more engaged, and revamping student evals may not be the most pressing of these issues, but one reason to tackle it first is that our evals haven't been changed since 2008, and there's a lot of research that has been done by educators on student evals in the 17 years since the college last even looked into this. And there's also some new tools available for customizing student evaluations that are really, I think, exciting and valuable. And most colleges in the last decade and a half have changed dramatically their course evals for these reasons. So two separate student and faculty groups have met, discussed, reviewed this literature, and finally approved the draft motion included in the agenda. We also fielded a survey to all chairs on items they used and would like to see added. And this draft has also been circulated to the chairs. And I expect maybe you'll be hearing from some of them. Apart from the Senate committee, a larger working group met in the fall multiple times. And that allowed engaging faculty from all of the schools, some of whom have specialized expertise in this subject matter that we are taking on education and survey research, like Anastasia Lipnovich of Education, Chris Rosales in Sociology, Sonia Munchi, Urban Studies, Lysandra Friedland, you all know from OIE. And we also received great suggestions from Amy Wan on questions that should be added to evaluations of courses, of W courses, and from Dean Savage, who I don't need to tell you who he is here, but he, you may not know or remember that in addition to being chair of the Senate and chair of this committee, and chair of sociology, he also did a lot of work analyzing data, trying to look at the Queen's College's student evaluation data, looking for biases, looking for response rate effects, the transition from paper to online, and so on. The students that were on these two groups, one or the other of the two groups, gave us essential perspectives on what it's like from the point of view of students to do these evaluations, how they thought about them. So rather than try to tweak this 17-year-old questionnaire, we decided to start from the ground up. The justification that's in the 20-page document that was included in the agenda lays out a number of criteria that we decided really should guide the selection and wording of student evaluation questions. Appendix 6 has a much longer and more detailed support for those criteria than the short justification that's on the first and second page of the motion. I don't want to take up your time today reviewing all these changes and justifications. Please read the document between now and our next meeting, and we will be able to have a much more productive discussion. Let me just give you some of the most important issues on the table and motivations for doing this. So we have you know, four main reasons. The college has four main reasons for doing student evaluations. Feedback to instructors to improve their teaching, data for chairs and promotion committees to as input into assessing teaching effectiveness and promoting effective teachers, data to students for deciding what courses to enroll in, and also just giving students a voice in their educational experience. So those are the goals in principle. However, the research shows that there are two big problems with student evaluation data as a measure of teaching effectiveness. First of all, the most thorough studies of student ratings of teachers finds no correlation with how much students have learned in a course. Zero. That's the study by Bob Udall and collaborators. They just don't correlate with learning. These studies aren't easy to do. You have to have the same course, same subject matter with two different instructors, have comparable groups, etc. But there are now hundreds of studies. They did a meta-analysis of all of them, and there's no correlation. Second, a great many studies have shown that student ratings of teachers are biased by grade expectations, by time demands of the course, by the age of the instructor, gender, race, appearance, even accents. So there's three implications of these findings that have really emerged extensively in the last, you know, since we last looked at student evaluations. One is that chairs and promotion committees should only very cautiously use student evaluation data, course evaluation data, as just one of many factors in evaluating teaching effectiveness. Secondly, the more problematic items, the ones that are probably least correlated with learning and most prone to bias, should be the ones we should try to replace with ones that, at least in theory, are a better measure of teaching effectiveness and more predictive of student learning. And the third thing is that we should prioritize in redesigning student evaluations of teaching, getting useful feedback to instructors to improve their teaching. So just an overview of the biggest changes. Appendix 1 has the proposed new questions for in-person and online sync courses. Appendix 2, the questions for the async courses. There's just two differences. Appendix 3, the three additional questions for the writing intensive courses. And a fourth big change is we are proposing the introduction of customization in which instructors can add up to three, it's optional, up to three of their own questions that will, I think, be an amazingly useful tool for teachers to ask students in their classes whether new things that they're trying, new books, new teaching methods, the balance of teaching and discussion, anything that they want, to get feedback from the students on, this is a great tool for that. And so if you ask any 10 faculty what their favorite 10 course evaluation questions are, you're going to get 10 different answers. Or their favorite course evaluation question is, you'll get 10 different answers. So coming to an agreement on these lists of questions was not easy. Took lots of discussion, and let me just preview some of the biggest changes that you'll notice. We've dropped almost half of the 15 questions from the 2008 questionnaire. That's what we recommend. And this includes, brace yourselves, the hallowed, what is your overall evaluation of the instructor as distinct from the course? It's a tempting single metric to use, but it is bad in many ways. For one thing, that's the one item that doesn't correlate with student learning. That's been studied the most. Because it's used the most, that's the one that's been studied the most, and that doesn't correlate with student learning. In part, it's because the question is hard for students to interpret. What are they evaluating exactly? How do you evaluate somebody? It's a kind of often becomes translated into a measure of likability. And that is where a lot of these biases come in. They aren't sure exactly how to evaluate the kinds of learning experience they've had because the question doesn't really even address that. And even if you asked a more pointed question about how much have you learned in this class, it's hard for students to identify that. So this question is particularly prone to equity issues, gender, racial, course difficulty biases, and the resulting data is not very useful to instructors. Because if you're told students don't like you as an instructor, that doesn't really give you much idea about how to improve. What's wrong with your class? How can you make it better? So we reworded, we kept the other questions, but most of them were reworded in some minor ways, usually. I'm not going to go over all of these again, because I'm looking forward to a fuller discussion of this in April. My email is on the first page of this, because I've chaired the committee that put this motion together. So please do, when you have a chance to read it, send me your feedback, your comments, your suggestions. As I said, it wasn't easy getting agreement on all this, and I'm not sure whether I would be able to herd the cats and get them to sign off on changes, but if I got a deluge of emails from faculty saying, oh, but I love that old question, can't you keep it somehow, or I hate this new question, then that's certainly feasible. So that's all I have time for, I think. But thank you very much for listening, and look forward to this bigger discussion of this in April. And hopefully a vote.
Does anyone have any initial questions? Yes, Fidel, please. Not to put you on the spot while you're here.
That's what I'm here for.
Fidel Tavares from history. It's a very simple question. And one of the biggest obstacles I come to with evaluation my students is that they just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I even have them in class, and they still don't. So are we thinking of any incentives for?
So that's a great question. I have to say that this motion is just limited to changing the questions that we're asking. It says nothing about how the data is used. I mean, I gave that my own personal opinion about how chairs should be skeptical of the data and so on, and cautious about using it. But there's no policy change relating to that in this dot motion, and there's no policy change relating to trying to increase response rates or providing resources to students or faculty or committees for using data or completing these. That said, the committee is considering making some recommendations about those other things, putting materials together, things that could be provided to students to encourage them to complete their course evaluations, explaining briefly the rationale for doing it, why it's in their interest, why they're giving feedback, and we want to improve as instructors, and if you give us feedback, it'll help us. The response rates overall are about 30%. And that's a pretty steady rate over the last several years. That's not terrible. It could be better, but you get, with a class that's of any size, you get meaningful data on that, and it's not clear that increasing to 50% or 60% would change the results that dramatically. That said, I think there are ways to encourage students to take this seriously. You mentioned one, which is doing it in class. It may not work, but I think if we come up with a script that can explain the rationale of these course evaluations, we might be able to do better than that. Thank you for your question. That's a very good one. And a very long-winded answer. Apologies.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I think we want to go back to the...
Thank you, Peter. Oh, here. So I don't vote twice.
I want to thank Peter and the committee, all the folks that you mentioned that worked on this. I'm still conferring with my department, but this is a model of presentation of a new policy idea to implement. And you've clearly done a lot of work and a lot of thinking. So whether or not we like it or don't like it or have changes or things like that, I do really just want to say I appreciate the work of the committee in putting all this together. It's very thoughtful, so thank you. I'm also beholden, anytime course evaluations come up, to say the following, which is boilerplate. I emailed my chair this last night at like midnight because I ran into her and I forgot to say it, but it is the policy of the Senate, long-held policy of the Senate, that tenure and promotion committees may not use written comments in the evaluation of their faculty. I believe that the prior provost office had a different opinion about that, and I understand that campus practice varies, but just caveat for the record, I feel compelled to say that. Did I get that right? Excellent. Okay, last chance, any other announcements, reports, memorials? Okay, we'll move on then to special motions, which we've added one.
That has very helpfully, I just want to project it.
I have it in a separate.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, scanning the area where the administrators sit. You'll recall, if you were at our last meeting, that we passed a resolution. We passed two resolutions regarding ITS. One was about the college's website in general. I'll just report that I'm gathering questions and materials for that and working with the relevant committees to anticipate a report regarding the college website's outage. This is the text of the motion that we passed a month ago that related specifically to Rosenthal Library. Also, I'm using that as a shorthand for the Queen's Memory Project, some of the other QC pages and things like that. I'm requesting details information of a report from CUNY Central. One of the stated reasons was, careful how I say this, was that there was information from CUNY Central regarding the library's website being down, and the Senate had requested that. We have not received that. The library has not received any of that information, so I'm going to move a second resolution. Forgive me if I'm reading from this microphone. I can go up to the other ones if someone objects. But I'll introduce this. I'm Kevin Ferguson, Department of English. This is a second resolution to provide the chief librarian with information on the security vulnerabilities of the library server. Whereas the Academic Senate duly resolved on February 13, 2025, that the, quote, CIO, Queens College Chief Information Officer, shall provide access to the CIS, CUNY Computing and Information Services, report to the Queens College Chief Librarian or designees, and whereas the CIO has failed to provide such a report, be it resolved that the Senate requests that all records, including but not limited to emails, text messages, reports, and other communications of any kind related to the Rosenthal Library and Queens Memory Project websites outages, be transmitted to the Chief Librarian or designee within 10 days. Let's move for debate, probably, yeah. So I will make this motion. Is there a second? So seconded, and now we'll move to debate.
Is there a typo within 10 days?
Within 10 days.
The very last line.
Yes. Within 10 days.
I'll take this as an editorial amendment to fix the typo to go from with to within. And I is a PDF, so I can't fix that. Kat, will you make a note? Thank you. Thank you.
This is only the unconvicted animals concerned.
Is there any other debate?
Move unanimous consent.
Just checking. Emily, are you heading to the microphone?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, sure.
And I'm wondering if the Graduate School of Library Information Studies has spent my whole career as a librarian watching people ignore our needs. It's very challenging. I can't believe you have to have a second resolution about us here on the floor. Within 10 days, I encourage all of us to go yes on this resolution and to begin thinking about what to do on day 11.
Thank you, Emily. I appreciate that.
Move unanimous consent.
I'm not hearing an objection, so unless anyone else likes to speak against the motion, I'll move unanimous consent. Any objections? Okay, so the motion carries. Thank you. I will transmit this to the CIO, and I will follow up with this body and other smaller groups next month or before so. Okay, moving on to committee reports. Do we have a report from the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee?
And Lord, Chair of the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee and representatives from Computer Science, I'd like to move the UCC minutes from February 13th, 2025, and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you, Ken. Is there any objections to unanimous consent for the UCC minutes? Seeing none, we'll approve those. Thank you very much. Next, we have the Graduate Curriculum Committee. We have two sets of minutes, I believe.
In the body, biology, the chair of the GCC, I move to approve the minutes of both December 4th, 2024, and February 5th, 2025 of the GCC. Minutes. And I would also note that they include a change from the Master of Arts to the Master of Science in Biology. The request is unanimous.
Thank you. Dave, is there any objections? Seeing none, we'll accept both minutes. Thank you very much. And next up on our committee reports is the nominating committee report, dated today. I'm going to project this, thanks, Kat, put it in a separate tab for me so I don't have to scroll down. You'll see that we have a number of seats on our standing and special committees, as well as the topic of the Dean of Social Sciences Review Committee, which we've talked about the last couple of meetings. Your name?
Sorry, dyslexia philosophy. I move that we adopt Shastrin as
are there any objections to unanimous consent for the nominating committee report? Seeing none, we'll accept it. Thank you very much. Okay. Good. Old business. Speaking of nominating committees, first off, students, thank you for being here. It's so nice to see you. It's looking really empty the last couple of meetings. It's good to have you here. Any of you in the arts and humanities? Education? All right, we have two empty seats. The nominating committee, as we just saw, is the committee that prepares a report. Of course, we get to vote on that, can always nominate names from the floor, object to things, so on and so forth. We, in order to do our business, need to get a few more people on that committee, and some of those are student seats. So we have a nomination for the nominating committee, the student seat for the Arts and Humanities. Is there a nomination? Okay, seeing none, I'll ask if there's a nomination for the student seat on the nominating committee in education. Okay, seeing none, I will make my stale joke about harassing you next month about this. It will not go away. Old business stays and stays and stays. Like those emails that I haven't responded to. Moving on to new business, election of a student member to the executive committee. We have an empty seat on the executive committee. The executive committee is the committee which establishes the agenda for the Senate and considers matters, the pressing order to bring to this body. Is there a nomination for a student for the executive committee? Are you guys? The executive committee meets on Thursdays at 3:30 once a month. 2 weeks before this body meets. You can get back. We do need to elect the, so from the floor, which we're doing now, it's the chair of the Senate and the executive committee. All of the other seats go through the nominating committee. So we will need to do this if we don't elect someone today. If we elect someone today, they could go to the next executive committee. Take that back. Executive committees are open. Anyone can go. You're all welcome. Come swing by, but you can't vote. Otherwise, we'll have to wait till next month, and then there's really only one meeting left. But the term expires in 20, no, it's a year late, so it's kind of short. We do that every year. Please consider it. Aaron, right? Okay, thank you for being here also. Any other nominations for the executive committee student seat? Would you like to? You just go to the microphone, please. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, just say your name.
That's right.
My name is Bruce Duff, and I nominate myself for the student member of the executive committee.
Yay! Yeah, easy that was. Excellent. Thank you so much. I'm supposed to ask now, are there any other nominations for the student seat? We're going to have a power struggle. A vote off. We'll hit you up next year, don't you worry. Just don't graduate yet. Okay, seeing no other nominations, the secretary shall cast one vote in favor of the nominee. Thank you. Let's make sure we get your name spelled right, and we'll put you on the email list, sir. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Okay, last is we have a... Oh, is this in the minutes here? Okay, so my colleague Karen Weingarten has agreed, I don't know what the verb is, to serve for the University Faculty Senate. We have, right? Let's go. Public service. The UFS, the listserv is getting hot right now. There's a lot going on over there, so Tina knows what I'm talking about. It's very important, it's always important, especially now. So at any rate, way that works is once a year we do elections here, and then if we have any empty spots, so Simone, you know what's going on too, you're on this. If there's any open
spots,
find someone to replace you. Don't let this fall on, well, it won't fall on me because I'll be gone. At any rate, if we don't fill our delegation, we can nominate you from the floor if you have a petition with 10 signed names, and I can aver and attest that Karen has 10 other folks that want her to be a university faculty senator, and so I bring that to you, that petition, which I can't present, and ask for unanimous consent to accept Karen Weingarten as a UFS member. Are there any objections? Seeing none, we'll accept that, and I will send her a text message of thanks. Sign all of your names to it. And that brings us to the conclusion, unless there's a second page, which is not. So thank you all. Good to see you. Motion to adjourn, and we'll continue next month. Onwards and upwards. That wasn't bad.